Welcome to MetaStrategy's Forum on World-Class IT. I'm Peter High, and I'm pleased to welcome Baljit Dale to the broadcast. Baljit is the Chairman and Chief Executive Officer of JDA Software, a software and consultancy company providing supply chain management, manufacturing planning, retail planning, store operations, and collaborative category management solutions. Prior to leading JDA, Baljit was an operating partner at New Mountain Capital, a private equity firm based in New York. Before that, Baljit served in several executive roles at Aon Corporation, including Chief Executive Officer of Aon Hewitt and Aon Consulting, Chief Operating Officer of Aon Benfield, and Chief Information Officer of Aon Corporation. Baljit serves on multiple boards and holds a Bachelor of Science degree in Computer Science from the University of Warwick in England. I recently caught up with Baljit by phone in his office in Scottsdale, Arizona, and our conversation covered World-Class IT Principle 1, people, as we discussed the importance of talent management as the organization scales and evolves. Principle 2, infrastructure, as we discuss the impact of new technologies on traditional brick-and-mortar supply chain solutions. Principle 4, IT and business partnerships, as we discussed how IT can help with competitive differentiation at JDA. Principle 5, external partnerships, as we spoke about how JDA builds and leverages its relationships with a diverse set of clients, as well as a variety of other topics.
This is Peter High. Please consider reading my new book, Implementing World-Class IT Strategy, How IT Can Drive Organizational Innovation. The book covers topics such as the CIO as strategic facilitator, the development of IT missions, facilitating corporate and divisional strategy, the development of IT's own strategic plans, the development of enterprise architecture, reviewing, refreshing, and communicating strategy, and several other topics, all told with stories from leading CIOs from a variety of major corporations. You can find it at Amazon.com, my publisher's website, Wiley.com, and at your better bookstores. Thank you very much.
Baljit Dale, welcome to the Forum on World-Class IT. Baljit, I thought we'd begin with your role. You are Chairman and Chief Executive Officer of JDA Software and have been for nearly 3 years now. And I thought we'd begin with your thoughts on the status of JDA, where things stand today, and maybe some additional thoughts about where things are heading.
So within JDA, we're the leader in supply chain and retail solutions. You know, we have 4,000 customers around the globe. We're in 70 locations. We have a rich history of innovation. So last week we announced that we were just granted our 300th patent, and we have another 100 patents that we filed. And we have breadth of solution, but also depth of solution. So we're very pleased that we're the only company that is in the leader quadrant for all five Gartner Magic Quadrants in the supply chain space. But whether it's through acquisition or our own R&D investment, we have a very, very rich tradition of innovation, which I think is recognized by our customers. So we serve 78 of the top 100 retailers in the world, 78 of the top 100 manufacturers, 8 of the top 10 third-party logistics companies. But it's also recognized by the industry analysts like Gartner.
That's great. I appreciate that. And the organization was founded in 1985. It's been private, public, it's private again. I wonder if you could talk briefly about just sort of the current ownership structure and the, I understand from some of the announcements of the Blackstone investment, for instance, that a lot of that will be used towards, you know, sort of increased R&D, increased emphasis on cloud-based software. Can you talk a bit about that?
So we have two private equity owners, so New Mountain Capital, and New Mountain made an investment actually back in a legacy company called Red Prairie in 2010. And then in 2012, made an additional investment and took JDA private and merged it with Red Prairie. And the thesis was Red Prairie was the leader in supply chain execution, and JDA was the leader in supply chain planning and retail solutions. So the idea is you bring them together, and that's how you get the breadth and depth of solution that I spoke about previously. We've been basically, you know, growing the business, running the business. And then one of the things we had was some debt maturities coming due in 18 and 19. And so Newman said, look, we got to rethink about all these debt maturities. Let's find a partner and basically bring in new equity, reduce the level of debt, but also push the maturities out to 2023. So I was very pleased that Blackstone decided to come alongside New Mountain. So New Mountain put in additional equity on top of the equity they had put in previously, and then New Mountain and then Blackstone put in equity as well. So combined, the equity investment is $570 million. It's 80% of that new equity is Blackstone, 20% of it is New Mountain. You know, with all of that, we've reduced our interest payments by $80 million a year. And so we're actually using that money now to further invest in R&D. We have sort of three buckets of R&D investment. So there's what we call sustaining innovation. So our existing products continuing to add feature functions to those. There's what we call integration investment. So basically taking our different solutions and making them more integrated, not just at a data level, but at a business process level as well. And then we've got what we call disruptive innovation, which is a lot of the work we're doing on the Google Cloud platform. And we're going to steer more of that R&D investment towards the disruptive innovation. So more SaaS-based solutions, solutions that for the customers, they can onboard themselves more quickly, very intuitive user interface, grounded in data science. So a lot of the work that we do in JDA Labs. And so, you know, great news is that we've already had a big commitment to R&D. So we spend over $100 million on R&D, which we believe is the biggest R&D investment in the supply chain space. And we're actually going to extend that.
Excellent. And given your special relationship with a variety of retailers, obviously that is an industry that's gone through a tremendous amount of change past decade. I wonder, can you talk a bit about your own perspectives on that change, how traditional bricks and mortar, many decade old retailers are using technology to better compete with the digital natives that now make up an increasing percentage of their competition?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because we talk about the consumer being in charge and the consumer being the new boss. Because if you think about it, what technology has enabled is the consumer to be more informed about the products and the brands. They typically, they go into a store and they know more about the product than the store associate. The consumer decides how they want to buy online, in store. They decide how they want the fulfillment to happen. So they can buy in the store, they can buy in the store, have shipped to the home, buy online, ship to the home, click and collect. And then they also, in terms of returns, they drive how they want to return the product as well. And so given that, the fact that the consumer is the new boss and the expectation of the consumer keeps rising, right? So it used to be, oh, 5-day delivery. Then it was 2-day delivery. Now, you know, we're talking about same-day delivery. That creates huge opportunities for us because given that customer's expectation and the fact that they want a unique brand experience, every retailer and frankly manufacturer as well is challenged with the fact that how do they do that in the most profitable way possible? And in order to do that, you need to revamp your entire supply chain and sort of merge the physical and digital supply chains together. So we talk a lot about the supply chain of one. So for instance, you know, Peter, you will have a view of how you want to buy and how you want to fulfill. And so we've got to gear the supply chain to you so we can deliver to you in the most profitable way possible. Erin may have a different view of how she wants to buy and wants the fulfillment and do the returns. And so we've got to gear the supply chain to her so it can be done in the most profitable way possible. That creates huge opportunities for us. The other thing I would say from a traditional brick and mortar retailer is we believe the store plays an important role both in terms of the customer's experience, in terms of feeling product, touching product, but also in terms of fulfillment. And actually, you're starting to see some of the traditional e-commerce folks start building physical stores because they've recognized this. But again, all of that creates huge opportunity for us because to do it in the most profitable way possible, you really need to have a supply chain that's geared to sort of each customer's expectation.
Yeah, very interesting. I wonder also, you know, as your organization has evolved, how have you thought about talent management? What sorts of skills are you looking for as you grow? And how has that evolved over time in the couple of years you've been CEO?
Yeah, Terrific question. I mean, we think a lot about talent. And actually, it's interesting. Last week, we went through a two-day calibration exercise. So we brought the entire executive committee together, spent 2 days calibrating the top 150 folks in the organization. So we take talent management very seriously. I think one of the things that we've seen is we're starting to now realize that, especially on, from an R&D perspective, we're hiring more people with a data science background. We're taking, and this is all in JDA Labs, so we've got folks from the data science background. We're also looking at areas where we traditionally haven't gone for user experience and user interface folks. So, you know, in JDA Labs, we have a lot of people from the video gaming industry, because if you think about a video game, it has to be super intuitive because there's typically a lot going on. So we've actually brought those folks in to actually help us think about what the user experience should look like. And then we've had to meld into that group some of the more traditional folks we've had who have all the supply chain expertise. And also, you know, with JDA Labs, we redid the entire office. It's much, there's no offices. It's very hip. It's very trendy. It attracts millennials. And so we've started rolling that type of construct out to all of our offices around the world. But with JDA Labs, we've had to think very differently about the talent that we've been bringing in.
That makes sense. Also, given the diversity of what your solutions do, is there a typical buyer within your client, typical role that they play, a title they hold, or is it a fairly diverse array of people that you're typically engaged with?
It's really diverse, and it's across the three industries. So if you're in retail, if you're more on the planning side, you could be a buyer or a merchandiser, potentially even a CFO, you know, if you're looking at some of our enterprise planning systems. If you're more into the store and management of the workforce in the store, then that's obviously somebody who's responsible for store operations. You know, if it's transportation, it'll be a transportation manager. Similarly, on the manufacturing side, you know, you've got folks who are responsible for running the factories. So, you know, if we're doing a manufacturing planning solution, that would normally be the buyer. A lot of manufacturers, especially in the beverage space, do something called direct store delivery. So their Pepsi truck that's going to the store and delivering the Pepsi onto the shelves. So they have a lot of transportation. So there you'll be working with the transportation manager. And in third-party logistics, it's typically the person responsible for transportation and warehouse. So it really depends on which industry, and then within that industry, what solution they're actually buying.
Does that mean that your sales team is divided by those segments as well to reflect the differences in the not only the industries you're pursuing, but the roles and the responsibilities, and therefore the needs of the people on the other end?
Yeah, so the way we have sales set up is we have business development and inside sales. But in terms of the folks, so they're really doing demand generation or smaller deals. We have quota-carrying reps who interface with the customers, but supporting those quota-carrying reps are folks with industry experience. And then we also have pre-sales. And the pre-sales folks have much more of a focus on the different solutions. So you, for instance, if, you know, let's say we go in and see a retailer and a retailer said, we're having a high number of out of stocks, so product is not on the shelf. Well, the industry people will go in and say, okay, well, let's try and understand what's going on there. Is it because the merchandise is sitting at the back of the store and not on the shelf? Is it because you didn't get the delivery from your retail distribution center? Is it because you didn't get the delivery from the manufacturer, and what's driving that? So they'll try and pinpoint the problem. And once they've done that and said, look, you know, we've got solutions that can help solve it, then the pre-sales folks come in and talk about the power of the solution. And they'll talk about it at a much greater depth. So for instance, in the transportation space, one of the drivers in terms of fuel savings is how you load the product on the rear axle. So our product folks, you know, in the transportation space, can talk about the capability of the product to make sure that you optimize the balance on the rear axle.
How do you think about, you have some traditional competitors, large organizations, but you also actually have a number of smaller service providers that compete in different slices of your business as well. As you point out, Gartner, for one, pontificates that yours is a solution that's very well-rounded. How do you think about remaining abreast of the competitive landscape as diverse as it is to ensure that you are continuing to differentiate?
I think at a macro level, the way we compete against some of the bigger folks like the SAPs and the Oracles of the world is we're only focused on supply chain and retail solutions. So that's where our R&D dollars go. That's where we're hiring the talent. You know, we have 4,800 associates all focused on supply chain. Obviously, those bigger folks are focused on HR, finance, CRM, a bunch of other things. Then versus the niche competitors, you know, obviously they've got point solutions, but the power that we bring is because we've got breadth and depth of solution. And as I said, one of the buckets of investment we do in R&D is how you integrate those, our solutions together. When a customer looks at saying, okay, when I need it, the next couple of years, I'm going to need to buy warehouse, transportation, demand, and replenishment. They could buy a set of point solutions, but then they've got to integrate that stuff together. With ours, a bunch of that integration is already done. We've already defined use cases across warehouse, transportation, demand, and replenishment. And so the level of integration that they need to do is not as great as if they were buying a number of point solutions. The other thing that we do as well is we spend a lot of time thinking about both the bigger players and the niche players in terms of where their products are and their solutions are relative to ours. And we have this as part of our strategy around the roadmap. We look at five different things. So we look at, you know, where are we in terms of innovation versus the competitors? Where are we in terms of user experience? Where are we in terms of end-to-end synchronized capabilities, performance and scalability, and total cost of ownership? So we call these the vectors of differentiation. And by solution, we will map against those five vectors where our solution is versus where the competitors is. And therefore, we can look at where we need to steer R&D investment to close any gaps on those five vectors of differentiation. So at a macro level, you know, we're very focused on supply chain and retail, unlike the bigger folks. And against the niche players, we have depth and breadth of the solution and we're integrating it. And then at a more micro level, we use the vectors of differentiation to understand where there are gaps in our solutions versus the competitors so we can close those.
Excellent. You referenced strategic planning. You have, as a good CEO should, wealth of experience in strategic planning. You worked in that function, in fact, at Starwood before becoming a strategic planning consultant at McKinsey. Then switched to Aon, where you were CAO of Aon Consulting, you were the global CIO of Aon, and eventually rose to become the CEO of Aon Hewitt. I'd love to talk a little bit about your career journey and how the collection of these steps for yourself added the same kind of breadth and depth you've just been referencing in a different way, of course, but in terms of the breadth of a consultant, for instance, the depth of joining a company and rising through that. I'd also, frankly, be interested in the advantages of having spent time in leading the IT organization for nearly 2 years and the sort of experiences that gave you as you continued your rise up to CEO.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, you know, I've bounced around a bunch of different places and I'd love to say it was all planned in advance, but, you know, it sort of wasn't. I mean, some of it was just opportunities that presented themselves. Some of it was, you know, when I went from McKinsey to Aon, it was the fact that Greg Case, who's the CEO of Aon Corporation, was a former McKinsey partner like myself and pulled me into Aon. I think one of the key things is, obviously, I started off in technology. You know, I have a degree in computer science. I started off right, actually, funnily enough, one of our customers, Marks & Spencer. I used to work for Marks & Spencer in their food ID function, building, you know, a merchandising system. So I started off in IT. When I came over and joined ITT Sheraton, that then became Starwood, it was interesting. I was working on the ittsheraton.com. Because my first role in ITT was to work on the connection to the airline systems. And then the internet came along and everybody was like, how do we get a presence on the web? And I said, well, why don't we use the same concept we use with the airlines, but do it and create a website for it? But it was interesting. As the internet became more and more important, it suddenly dawned on folks that having people who had a technology background thinking about the strategic planning was becoming increasingly more important. And myself, I became much, much more interested in how do you leverage technology to drive the business and to technology enable the business? And so that's sort of how I migrated within Starwood from being just in the IT function over into more of a strategic planning role. And then that's what attracted McKinsey to me, because at that point in time, McKinsey, who do, as you said, their focus is on strategic planning and strategy, were increasingly getting asked by their clients, hey, this is a great strategy, but how have you thought about the role of technology in this? And so suddenly they were looking in the marketplace for folks who had a strategy background, but were also deep on the technology side. So it worked out really well, because suddenly all these businesses were looking at role of technology to drive strategy. So I had, 7 great years there, and then moved over to Aon when Greg moved over to Aon. And it was interesting because, within the construct of Aon, being in, and a lot of my roles overlapped. So when I was CAO of Aon Consulting and then became the CEO of Aon Consulting, I was also the CIO for a little bit. So it was interesting trying to explain to my other peers who were running business units how we could leverage technology to really drive the business. And so I found it invaluable, one, to be in that business role running a business, but also to be the CIO, because the way we structured it within Aon is all the IT resources across the globe reported into me, hard line and dotted line into the business unit. So even when we were having discussions about leveraging technology, and the other business unit leaders would say, Val, this is going to cost quite a bit. I turn around and say, yeah, I know. I run a business as well, so I am inflicting this on myself. But trust me, this is the right thing to do, because we're going to make an investment now, and we're going to see the benefits, 18 months, 2 years from now. So I found it invaluable playing both those roles at the same time.
That's excellent. I'm curious, as you look forward, say 2 or 3 years into the future, as fast as the pace of technology change is coming, what are some of the trends that you're remaining abreast of or particularly excited about potentially leveraging within your organization, or perhaps just personally curious about as to their evolution?
So I would look at, I'll talk about how I see the business drivers changing, and then how we're also looking at technology. So from a business perspective, as I said, so the consumer's in charge. So you're going to see a much greater focus on customer centricity, on segmentation, much more focus on localization and personalization. The other thing we're seeing is, as part of that, playing out into the products themselves, right? So the customer is now asking us for personalization in the product. So for instance, Heineken, you can go and get a bottle of Heineken or a case of Heineken where you can customize the label. For say, if you're going to have a party and you want the Heineken label to be different. An even more generic example of that is shirts. So I buy my shirts, and it used to be the case that you think about sleeve length and collar size. Well, now the shirts that I buy, you get them also in classic fit, slim fit, and tailored fit. So think about, from a manufacturer's perspective, how they think about demand, how they think about raw material or semi-finished product versus final finished product, depending on how many classic versus slim versus tailored fit. Increasingly, customers are saying, I don't want the standard shirt. I want it to fit me, right? Another great example of that is Levi's 501s. So the Levi 501, been around for decades, iconic brand, button fly. Levi's found out that the younger generation, the millennials, like the notion of having this iconic jean, but they wanted it slimmer in the leg. So they were taking it to tailors and actually having the legs tapered. And so Levi's actually went out and realized this is a great opportunity. So now you can get something called the Levi's 501 CT, which is custom tailored. So it's the exact same 501 jean. It's just, it isn't a straight cut, it's a tapered cut, right? You're going to increasingly see that. And so given these business trends, the things that we focus on from a technology perspective are things like machine learning, predictive analytics, trying to understand, can you understand that demand is in the marketplace and make that aware to folks? We're spending a lot of time on IoT, so working with a variety of different folks in terms of getting signals from different devices. So a good example is we're working with Intel on something called Store Optimizer. So Intel have this technology where they can spray onto the label that comes with the garment an RFID tag. It's a spray on RFID tag. We can put in a cheap RFID reader in the store, and then using our in-store technology, we can figure out what's happening to the inventory and direct the store associate. So I'll give you a great example in the apparel space. We work with a couple of apparel companies. One of their big issues is they have out of stocks on the shelf. And it isn't because the inventory is sitting at the back of the store, and it's not a case of they didn't get the shipment from the distribution center. The issue is the inventory is sitting in the fitting room. So what happened is people try it on, and then they go, oh, I didn't like it, or for what, it didn't fit the way I wanted, and then just leave it in the fitting room. And so what we can now do is look, because we've got the RFID reader talking to our in-store systems, we can turn around and send a note to the store associate and say, look, unless you're serving a customer, you need to go to the fitting room and get three of the green large sweaters, pack them up and put them back on the shelf because you're down to one on the shelf. Right, so that's another example where we're leveraging, IoT. The other thing we're doing around big data is working with Google is to get things like social news, events, and weather data, and pulling that into our supply chain algorithms along with the IoT data, so that you can make decisions. And over time, it'll be through machine learning. The system will be automatic. But you might have an example where you know where a truck is that's doing a delivery. You get a weather and traffic feed from Google that says that truck is gonna get stuck. So you might reroute that truck. You got another IoT device on a truck that's in the warehouse, and we know what the fill rate of that truck is. You can say in the warehouse, here, load these other things onto the truck that's the warehouse and have it fulfill the truck that was gonna go for, the original truck, but take a different route to get there. So we're merging IoT with big data to enable that to happen. And that's one of the reasons why we're partnered with Google on the Google Cloud platform.
That's excellent. Well, Bal, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Great conversation. I've really, really enjoyed it.
No, thank you, Peter. Is there anything that we didn't cover that you wanted to cover? I just want to make sure you got everything you need.
I think I did. Of course, you know your stories better than I do. If there's anything you think that's particularly salient that was not covered, please feel free to suggest it.
Yeah, I think the key thing I would say is this whole notion of that what we're very, very focused on, especially through JDA Labs, but even the existing R&D investment is, we're very focused on innovation within JDA because we see those business trends that I just talked about coming along and colliding with the technology trends and colliding with the consumer trends. And so we're very focused on how do you address the business trends, the consumer trends, and the technology trends as they come together? That to us is the nirvana. And if we can solve that, and we are solving that, that's what creates opportunity for us.
Excellent. Good. Well, Bal, it's a pleasure to make your acquaintance. I really appreciate your time this morning. Aaron, thank you also for your help in setting this up.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you so much, Bal. It's been a great conversation.
You've just listened to a podcast in a series we call Meta Strategies Forum on World Class IT. If you like what you've heard, please consider reading my book, World Class IT, Why Businesses Succeed When IT Triumphs, published by Josie Bass, a division of Wiley Press, in December of 2009. Both the book and the Forum on World Class IT offer stories from a wide range of top IT leaders relating to Meta Strategies' five principles of World Class IT. The five principles are as follows. Principle one is people, and it's really the foundational principle. Without the right people doing the right jobs at the right time, it'll be nearly impossible to achieve excellent performance. The second principle is infrastructure. We like to say that this is the principle that separates proactive organizations from reactive ones. If infrastructure is not reliably performing its tasks, the IT organization will become stuck in reactive mode, consistently fighting fires. If systems and hardware and networks and so on work reliably, then a larger portion of the organization can think about the future. The third principle is project and portfolio management. This is the engine through which new capabilities can be brought to bear on behalf of the company. It is important to ensure that projects are delivered on time, on budget, and on target, and that the portfolio collectively supports the objectives of the business. The fourth principle is IT and business partnerships. It's important that first and foremost, the different parts of IT, from business analysis to development and QA, through to support and all other aspects of IT, communicate effectively and efficiently. It's equally important then that IT develop a partnering relationship with the business that it is a part of. If the three prior principles are done well, then IT should earn a place at the strategy setting table, driving different parts of the business strategy. The fifth and last principle is external partnerships. Outsourcing is becoming a crucial weapon that organizations are employing, and managing these relationships to ensure that value is achieved is critical. In the fourth principle, the organization has learned and contributed to the discussion about what is strategic and what is not. Once that's clear, then it will be easier to determine which aspects of IT might be better managed by external partners or vendors. For more information on these five principles and the sub-principles that are associated with each, please visit our website at www.metastrategy.com, and please share your thoughts and comments by contacting us at feedback@metastrategy.com. And our theme music was written by David Armin. I'm Peter High. Thanks for listening.